Paid by the hour.
I'm here with Candace Kindred from Teriyaki Madness, one of Sheridan's most popular restaurants. Does catering?
Tommy, hi. If you want to mix things up from the usual catering lineup, we're bringing something fresh your group will actually get excited about.
You got my attention.
Think our insanely popular orange chicken, grilled steak or chicken, tofu, fresh veggies, and gluten-free options made hot and fresh just for your crew.
That's a big upgrade from the usual.
And reach out to me before you place your order and you'll get free setup and delivery.
Bring the madness to your next event with Teriyaki Madness. Madness Catering.
Doug, what kind of a tire costs a dollar?
The fourth one, Bob.
There's got to be a catch.
No catch. Buy three tires, get the fourth one for just a dollar at Waring Chevrolet.
Brand name tires?
Yep. BF Goodrich, Continental, Firestone, Goodyear, Michelin, Pirelli, and more.
So I get four tires for basically the price of three?
Exactly.
Wow, I suddenly love tire shopping.
Happens all the time, Bob.
A tire sale the Waring way.
WaringSheridan.com or stop by and see us at 107 East Alger.
If you haven't signed up for the Sheridan Media Newsletter, well, now's the time. You'll find some of the top news stories of the week, community events, local sports, weather, as well as the latest movies from Centennial Theater. What's happening at the Wild Theater? Discover fun facts, local photos and videos, Sheridan history, country bounty links, as well as links to some of your favorite businesses and promotions. It's emailed every Thursday morning. If you don't get the newsletter, you're missing out. Click on the Sheridan Media Newsletter button that's on the front of our website at SheridanMedia.com.
This is Public Pulse, your information and conversation program, brought to you by First Federal Bank and Trust. You can voice your opinion by calling 672-KROE. That's 672-5763. Now, your host for Public Pulse, Floyd Whiting.
Wednesday, April 1st, from the foot of the Bighorns in Wyoming's Emerald City, I'm Floyd Whiting, and this is Public Pulse. And this morning, we're joined by the Sheridan Police Department Chief, Travis Koltiska, and Captain Tom Ringley. Good morning, gentlemen. Welcome back.
Morning, Floyd.
Morning, Floyd.
How are things down at the department, Chief, overall?
Overall, things are great. We have had a couple of officers. One just got a FTO, one of our new officers, Christian Haley, or right at the tail end, and Trevor Simon's the same. Now Trevor's going to go to the academy here in April, right? Early April or late April. But we'll be getting Officer Bailey Moss back from the academy, set to graduate next week, a week from today or a week from tomorrow. So our staffing numbers are increasing. We've got a lot of people testing come this third week in April. Things are on the up.
That's fantastic.
So, yeah, fantastic news for us. And you know, call wise, you know, nothing out of the ordinary. It's been a relatively mild. People are out there behaving for the most part. I say for the most part, but yeah,
yeah.
No, things are good right now.
With the weather being so nice over the course of the what we call the winter,
right?
Did you see an increase in any kind of activity? To your knowledge, and I'm kind of dropping this question.
Yeah, I mean, nothing noticeable. I think there were more times of individuals, and a lot of it was juveniles being out past curfew because the weather's nice.
Oh, yeah.
It's not 30 below zero and everybody wants to be inside. People are wanting to be out. So there's a little increase in that. Other than that, nothing significant, I guess I would say.
I got in trouble once for being out past curfew. Me and a couple of my buddies, we were ditching cars, and we thought it was some sort of game, but we got an ass.
Nothing good happens after midnight, Floyd.
Nothing good. Now, most of the population will interact with the SPD or an SPD officer through traffic management, and that's what we're going to talk about today, traffic management for the 2025 year. Captain, what stood out to you the most in the 2025 traffic management data compared to last year?
Well,
or excuse me, 2 years ago now.
2025 is an odd year because in July, the statute regarding when we must complete a state reporting, a state crash report, remember the crashes, changed to where either there's injury, loss of life, or a vehicle's disabled. It used to be if it was over $1,000 worth of repair costs, then we had to do a state crash report. So that's where our state reportable accidents are down from 359 for the 22 through 24 average to 211. But what we also see are alcohol-involved crashes are down from the previous 3-year average of 16 to 7 in 2025. So we're happy about that. Not only that, our DUIs are down too. So that tells us that it doesn't appear that we're missing any DUIs. It's there are less people drinking and driving, which is the whole our whole goal.
Yeah.
We don't particularly enjoy arresting people for DUI. We would just rather people not drink and drive. So that indicates that that's on a downward trend. So kudos to the community for that. And that also injury crashes are down slightly from 48 to 39, which is roughly a 9% decrease as well. So as I said on the last show, the whole goal of traffic management is to make sure that people and goods can be transported through our jurisdiction safely. So it looks like we're trending that way.
Now, I remember speaking with you about the change in that statute of having to report. Since so many accidents now were over $1,000, I would imagine that they were getting reports that they, you know.
It didn't take much to reach that threshold. And when I started in law enforcement in 95, it was $500. And believe it or not, there were actually crashes, 2-vehicle crashes that wouldn't reach that threshold. And then costs of everything seem to have gone up. One body panel receiving any sort of damage, it seemed like would be $1,000 would reach that threshold. So yeah, there were a lot of stuff being reported to the state for that purpose. So when they changed that, there was a lot of support to change that threshold. And because we don't do body estimates. We're not people that repair vehicles. I mean, we can kind of look. You can look at some of them, and it's like that's obviously over 1,000.
Yeah.
The front tire's 50 feet away. There's going to be an issue there. But you know, oftentimes there was those crashes that involved you'd look at it and you'd say, well, it's borderline, not do a state report, and then the estimate would come back at $1,300 or $1,400, then you have to go back and do it. So,
oh, wow. So then you'd have to go back.
And a state action report is a very time-consuming process. It's a form by the state. It takes on average quite a bit of time to complete that. So it's allowed us to expedite some of our, they're still in-house reports. Now, just because it doesn't reach that threshold doesn't mean that the police department doesn't investigate the accident. It's just a local report at that point. It just doesn't get reported to YDOT or to the state of Wyoming. So I want to let everybody out there know that it doesn't mean that there's still requirements to report, statutory requirements to report accidents if they reach thresholds, and we will still investigate crashes when they occur. But change in the statute was what is actually reported to the state.
Chief, as we look at the DUIs for the year, fantastic news, first off. That's great news to receive, to know that there's a lot less people drinking and driving out there. What do you think are contributing factors to that?
I think one of it, I'll give all the credit to the establishments that are out there. I mean, we've built good relationships with our local establishments over the years. They are very much more aware, very much more responsible. They take it upon themselves. They have a duty to the safety of the public, and they're accepting that. And so I give all the credit to those establishments. DUI enforcement is nothing new.
Yeah.
We've been doing it since the captain and I started here and before. And so it's nothing new. So, you know, I really feel that the responsibility is being owned by everyone at this point. And that really is contributing to our lower numbers, I believe.
You know, you've said more than once, a DUI is the highest risk to public safety in Sheridan. And I believe that to be completely true. And I think people have, especially the establishments, as you said, have heard that message across the board. And it's great to see that people have kind of reduced that number themselves. Are we still seeing an older portion of the generation?
It seems like it is. The ages are trending up. We see a lot less 20 and 30-year-olds. And I remember when we were new, it was rare to see someone over 70.
Yeah,
it was extremely rare to get arrested for DUI. Now it seems like that late 50s, 60s, and 70s is becoming more and more prevalent. Which is it's just odd. The one consistent thing is our average blood alcohol concentration is ranges from a 1.5 to a 0.16.
Wow.
Maybe 1.7 for some years, and that's probably over the last 10 years. So it's weird. I think like the younger generation just doesn't drink as much in general, which is good if that's what they want to do or don't want to do. But the average age seems to be trending up.
And it could be a cultural thing where they grew up with all the PSAs that are out there, with all the information that's being presented, the numbers that they saw when they were little kids. I guess I'm no longer part of that generation, but
right.
I can remember those commercials when I was a kid. And drinking and driving was always a concern. It was always something that was being talked about along with alcohol.
Yeah, I think the educational component of that has increased significantly with the advent of social media and other platforms for us to get our messaging out. You know, the creation of the Governor's Council on Impaired Driving, which has been around for a while, but it wasn't around that I remember when I was a kid. I didn't know anything about that. And yeah, you would see the occasional, like I said, the national news or to be national campaigns, but we've been able to have more of a local approach to it, I think, now. Yeah. And there has been a shift in that. And that cultural aspect of how people view that for the good, right? I think that people understand. And unfortunately, we've all seen tragedy happen here in Sheridan when it comes to impaired driving. And I won't just say drinking, you know, drug impaired driving as well. And that has a bigger impact now as well, because it's, you know, you may not have heard about it 40 years ago.
Yeah.
As fast as you hear about it now, and as widespread as it gets, especially with social media.
And the danger with the drug driving is, regardless of how well our local dispensaries say they regulate themselves, people don't know exactly what they're consuming. If you look on a can of beer, it's going to tell you how much alcohol is contained by volume.
Yeah.
If you take a hit off a vape or eat a gum, you don't know exactly how much you're getting or what you're getting. So that's the, you know, it also seems like some of the alcohol DUIs are being replaced by controlled substance DUIs as well.
Interesting.
Yeah. And now some of those are prescription medication, but more and more it's THC and the derivatives.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, people just don't know how much they have on board, for lack of a better term. Although it's a crime to be under the influence of any controlled substance, especially if it's non-prescription.
Absolutely. Has there been a common cause that you're seeing behind crashes locally? Something that you can almost pinpoint?
Non-DUI crashes, it's driver inattention, whether it's two vehicles backing into each other in a large retail store parking lot, or someone just not paying attention as they turn left in front of somebody.
Yeah.
And also, this, you know, since we've known each other, it's always been that 2 extra minute thing in Sheridan is not going to affect your schedule. People are in a hurry, trying to push things a little bit, not paying attention to their surroundings.
I commonly speak with the Wyoming Highway Patrol regarding distracted driving. People on their cell phones, people maybe not paying attention to the road. They're trying to, in some cases, even read an email. Do we see a lot of that? Are we citing distracted drivers more or less?
That in itself has some challenges to prove, right? And depending on the situation too, the statute reads a text-based communication. Doesn't eliminate the ability you can look at your phone to find a phone number. To dial a phone number. So there's some, that statute needs a little work, in my opinion, it should just be complete hands-free requirements of any communication device.
I agree.
So that we see that, I see it all the time. We drive on marks, people don't see us. They'll pull up the stoplight next to me or whatever, and you can see them, they're sitting there looking down, and you know what they're doing, right? But they're stopped at that time, and in an unmarked car, I'll pull them over and have a little conversation with them about it. But it's very prevalent, and not just with phones. I mean, there's so many other distractions inside a vehicle now.
Yeah.
I mean, they're putting full-size computer screens in these cars now. There's all kinds of stuff that you can do on these vehicles. So any kind of distraction. I mean, back in the day, it was grabbing a burger and eating while you're driving down the road, or
flipping the tape over.
Or winding the tape with the pencil you had to keep in your car, because when the tape gets stuck in there, right? Yeah, probably nobody listening that remembers that. So all kinds of distractions in a vehicle. So distracted driving is a problem.
Recently just returned from a trip down in Utah to see my sister-in-law. She's got this new technologically advanced van. And as you said, the computer screen, all I was trying to do was turn on the air conditioning. And there are so many different settings on that screen, I never got it done. I managed to get the air on, but I couldn't figure out how to get the AC on. You almost need a massive training manual just to get through the programs on these things. And if you don't understand the computer within your car, you could be trying to turn on the AC for the next 5 minutes and not paying attention to what's going on around you. So those things do tend to happen. So folks, when you're driving, I would just suggest, you know what? Pay attention to driving. We're going to have more with our SPD in just a moment. You're listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE and 103.9 FM. Sheridan.
Ready to level up your career?
At First Federal Bank and Trust, our people are our greatest strength, and we're hiring full and part-time tellers to join our team.
Enjoy great pay, outstanding benefits, and a culture that empowers and supports you every step of the way.
Because at First Federal, we invest in you with the tools, training, and opportunities to grow both personally and professionally.
Take the next step at eFirstFederal.bank and discover a career that truly invests in you.
First Federal Bank and Trust is an equal opportunity employer.
It's showtime, Sheridan County. I'm back and I'm haunting the stage at Bighorn High School.
Unfortunately, he is. But you should still come see Beetlejuice Jr. It's strange, it's unusual, and it opens April 10th.
That's right. Starting April 10th, the students of Bighorn Schools are bringing the Netherworld to life. Ghosts, laughs, wild costumes, and me. Obviously the star of the show.
It's a musical about life, death, and finding your people. Also, he sings a lot.
You're welcome. So, grab your friends, your family, maybe a recently deceased relative.
Don't listen to him.
And get your tickets before they vanish into thin air.
Tickets are available now at www.bighorndrama.com.
Say it once, say it twice. Just make sure you buy your tickets.
Beetlejuice Jr. at Bighorn High School opens April 10th.
It's showtime.
Thank you to the sponsors, Sheridan Media, Altitude Home Mortgage, and Due West Home Builders.
Are your taxes still on your to-do list? You're not the only one. But don't worry. H&R Block makes filing them fast and never a drain on your time, no matter if you meet with us in person or drop them off. Plus, we're right in the neighborhood, giving you a convenience and confidence to cross those taxes off your list. So let us help lighten the load. Make an appointment at H&R Block today.
Good morning and welcome back to Public Pulse. I'm Floyd Whiting, and this morning we're speaking with the Sheridan Police Department Chief, Travis Koltiska, and Captain Tom Ringley. This morning, we're discussing the traffic management within the city for the 2025 year. Some good news on that did come down out of those numbers. DUIs are down for the year. There's going to be a bit of, I don't know if you can call it confusion or number changes, simply because of a change in statute and the way things are reported, which took place last year. Let's talk about selective traffic enforcement and how it's applied here in Sheridan. What is selective traffic enforcement, Captain?
Well, some violations are more dangerous than others. So an officer's enforcement action should be consistent with the severity of the violation. We generally issue citations for reckless or careless driving, following too close, failure to yield right away, or disobeying a traffic signal, a stop sign. But when we have things like maybe someone's traveling at 5 miles an hour over the speed limit, then officers have more discretion to issue a written warning, or for a tail light being out, then that's a written warning. So we want to stop the most dangerous stuff.
Yeah.
A lot of it's, the totality of the circumstances and what the officer sees as part of the, what the big picture looks like to them. If someone's had warnings, multiple warnings for speeding in this same zone, then they're probably, it's about time for a citation.
Mm-hmm. Now, when it comes to those individuals who tend to think that going 5 miles over the speed limit is not a violation, what would you say?
Any officer with more than a day on it has heard, I thought you gave us 6 miles an hour. And that's a myth. While we may not stop someone for traveling at 6 miles an hour over, on a day like we're going to have Friday with a lot of, what's calling for a lot of snow. And if the roads are slick, then we will stop inside for six over. Mm-hmm. It's just what the whole picture looks like.
Yeah, understanding the situation that's surrounding the situation.
Yeah,
and also depending on where you're located, it has a lot to play. School zones, threshold for potential citations much lower in a school zone where you've got kids that could bolt across the street anytime. The downtown where there's congestion with pedestrians, there are areas that threshold may be lower between a warning and a citation.
One thing that I'm always asking people to do is observe construction sites.
Big one.
Had an uncle who was working road construction back in the day. He got hit and left in a ditch for quite some time. And that's a family story that has gone through the Whitings. And so all of us really, really pay attention to construction zones because every one of those people out there is somebody's mother, somebody's father, somebody's loved one. So you get into those construction zones, you get into those school zones, folks, and mind those speed limits.
Not to mention law enforcement, either on the interstate or in town or out in the county on a traffic stop.
Absolutely.
While we're on the subject.
Yes. How many of those videos have we seen on social media now where there's an officer whose car gets hit and thank goodness makes it out of the way in time?
Yeah.
But what a terrifying experience that has to be. Mm-hmm. That's something that would definitely stick with me. Outside of DUIs, what would you say is the most dangerous driving behavior that our officers are encountering on a daily basis?
Careless or reckless driving. People that are just not exercising due care when they're operating a vehicle. They're overconfident, thinking that the rules of the road don't apply to them. We had a, 69 miles per hour in a 30 the other day.
My goodness.
That's a reckless driving or careless driving, right? Those obviously are more dangerous. When you're traveling, you take vehicle doing 30, making an impact into something, devastating. At 69 miles an hour, quadruple that. The energy and the force created by that 5,000 or 6,000 pound vehicle at that elevated speed is much more dangerous and much more harmful. So we have sometimes they're, whether it's kids doing cookies in the parking lot at the high school, whatever, anytime they're operating a vehicle without due care for safety, those are dangerous. That's when people get hurt seriously. And it's intentional driving too. That's the other part about it.
They mean to go that
fast. They mean to do that.
They're doing that on purpose. Mm-hmm. The car isn't out of control or anything like that. Mm-hmm. How often do you see violations of like following too close? I think that's something that everybody out there has experienced at least a couple of times. Someone tailgating you, the thought, I just slow down. That's what I
do. I mean, that's a good way to start it. Don't brake check anyone. That's how road rage incidents start, but they really become prevalent on the icy days. And on the wet days when people just don't give themselves enough time to stop. And once again, depending on what the big picture is, too close on today where it's relatively dry or the distance may be fine, but Friday when the roads are going to be icy, it may be too close. So be a courteous driver and just don't tailgate. we drive unmarked cars. I see people too close to me all the time, especially on, I travel Fifth Street a lot. So I just gradually slow down, and then get back to the speed limit. But it is very dangerous. I mean, people's reaction times aren't what they often think they are.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of times in those snowy situations, maybe you're more comfortable driving in that condition than the person in front of you. So if they're going slower, they're trying to be cautious. They're not comfortable driving at that speed. They want to be safe. Maybe they don't want to get their car dinged up or take that kind of chance. That doesn't mean you get on them and stay on them.
Yeah,
give those people distance.
How annoyed would you be if someone feels like they have to drive faster than their capabilities allow them, and then they hit you?
Yeah.
I mean, it's this. A couple miles below the speed limit isn't the end of the world.
High visibility enforcement, something that we talk about a lot, mm-hmm. In many different situations. This is also applied to traffic.
It's primarily applied to traffic and our DDACS program, our data-driven approaches to crime and traffic safety. High visibility enforcement is exactly what it says. It's being out there, being visible in the community, having our communities. Just our visibility can act as a deterrent to driving behaviors. Not only just criminal behavior, but driving behaviors as well. And because that's what we talk about. We talk about behavioral changes, not technical skills, not anything else than that. It's about a person's driving behavior. So by being visible, you know, I after 31 years in law enforcement, I see red and blue lights or anything. I'm like, I just do a quick self-assessment. Am I doing it? Is everything going right?
Is that
here,
for me?
Right? Yeah. And I still do that. And so that's also by being visible in the community, by having officers out there focusing on traffic enforcement, it doesn't just impact, say, that driver that we have pulled over. It impacts every vehicle and every driver that's passing us as we have them pulled over. And that is hopefully a chain reaction on down the road that they're going to operate with due care, operate safely, not be distracted. And they're just going to really think about their own behavior behind the wheel of the vehicle. So that's the whole premise behind high visibility enforcement, being visible, impacting people's behaviors.
And I think it's a fantastic idea because we're coming out of, you know, those years of the officer hiding between two buildings or behind the billboard.
That's TV land.
Yeah. I always believed, you know, hey, right out there, maybe parked in a parking lot at an angle, mm-hmm. which I see a lot, that's high visibility enforcement. It makes me automatically do that check, as you were saying. Am I following the speed limit? Am I doing what I'm supposed to do? That's chain reaction all the way down the line, as you said.
Yeah, and we use our crash data to put some extra hours in some of those areas where we have high crashes, because that's usually where the driving behaviors has, for whatever reason, has indicated there's more risk to the community. So we try to apply more hours to some of those areas. So we're always constantly evaluating where our crashes are occurring and how we can impact that specifically. At that area. School zones are another prime example. Morning and night when parents are dropping off students, we want to picking up, we want to try to be in those areas, in those school zones, to really make sure people are paying attention and driving the way they should in those areas.
And we've all been that person that has seen that car drive by too fast and yelling at them to slow down. And boy, that really makes me angry. In a school zone, especially neighborhoods with children playing in it, you got to think about those kids. One last topic that I really want to cover before I let you gentlemen go, and that is seatbelt enforcement within the city. Are people wearing them, Captain?
Seatbelts are a difficult one in Wyoming because we can't use it as a primary reason for a stop.
Oh, wow.
It's a secondary reason. But we do... We have a seatbelt grant where officers are paid overtime to through YDOT and the feds to come in and specifically look for seatbelt violations as they enforce all traffic laws. But you know, you can, once again, it's the kind of thing you can drive down the street and see people not wearing their seatbelts. It's not that difficult. A few years, YDOT did an actual study, and Sheridan did not rate very well on it.
I'll be honest. Sheridan had the lowest rate in the state of Wyoming, in a state that has the lowest rate of seatbelt use in the nation.
And talk about an unforced error, being in a crash without a seatbelt. Not only do we not want people to get injured, but the trickle-down effect it has on society as a whole. Hospital bills, unpaid hospital bills. It's so preventable. Seatbelts are proven to be safe. And I know Wyoming's fairly independent and people don't like to be told what to do, but it is the law and it is a fantastic way to protect yourself in the event of a crash.
Yeah, I agree 110% on that. It's always kind of blown my mind. You know, it's a quick habit to develop, actually. When I get into my car and I don't put the seatbelt on, I can't even remember the last time that happened because I feel naked. I feel like I'm not truly in the car as of yet. So, folks, take a couple of seconds, develop that habit, get that seatbelt on, keep yourself safe. There's people out there who love and want you around. So be safe. Gentlemen, I want to thank you so much for coming in this morning. It's always a pleasure having you guys in here.
Thanks for having us, Floyd.
All right, when we return, we're going to speak with Johnson County Commission Chair, Mr. Bill Novotny. You're listening to Public Pulse on KROE at 103.9 FM. Sheridan.
This is Maren Borsheim with First Federal Bank and Trust.
And I'm Nicole Pierce. Buying a home just got more affordable.
With the Mortgage Rate Relief Program, qualified buyers may receive an interest rate up to 1.5% below the current market rate with a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage.
That could mean lower monthly payments on your primary residence.
If your household income qualifies, we'll walk you through everything.
Call us for all the details at First Federal Bank and Trust or visit efirstfederal.bank.
First Federal Bank and Trust, helping you get home. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
I'm here with Candace Kindred from Teriyaki Madness, one of Sheridan's most popular restaurants. Does catering?
Tommy, hi. If you want to mix things up from the usual catering lineup, we're bringing something fresh your group will actually get excited about.
You got my attention.
Think our insanely popular orange chicken, grilled steak or chicken, tofu, fresh veggies, and gluten-free options made hot and fresh just for your crew.
That's a big upgrade from the usual.
And reach out to me before you place your order and you'll get free setup and delivery.
Bring the madness to your next event with Teriyaki Madness Catering.
Blood insurance is one of those things most people don't think about until it's too late. And then by then, the damage is done. What many homeowners don't realize is that standard policies don't cover flood damage, even when it's caused by heavy rain, snowmelt, or water that comes from places you wouldn't expect. They take the time to help you understand your actual risk and walk you through flood coverage options that make sense for your home and your location, not just a one-size-fits-all policy. Iron Valley Insurance Group, forged in strength, guided by compassion. Stop by or request a quote at ironvalleyins.com.
Doug, Wyoming roads are tough on tires.
Gravel, potholes, weather, it's a workout.
My tires look tired and worn.
Then it's time for the tire sale at Waring Chevrolet.
That's buy three, get one for a dollar deal, right?
Exactly.
Nice. So you get four brand name tires.
For basically the price of three.
My truck and my wallet love you, Doug.
That's the Waring way, buying tires. Go to WaringSheridan.com or come see us at 107 East Alger.
Wednesday, April 8th, the 52nd annual Pass Creek Angus Ranch production sale at the ranch just south of Wyola. 65 yearling and 32 fall Angus bulls sell out of sires like EB Clarity and Magnitude. 9 stout 2-year-old bulls and 25 open commercial heifers sell. Pass Creek breeds low-maintenance cattle that muscle up with quality carcasses. High performance to heifers, a bull in this sale for everyone. Videos with Frontier Live Sale. 52nd annual Pass Creek Angus Ranch bull sale, April 8th, Wyola. PassCreekAngus.com.
The following message presented by First Federal Bank and Trust, Sheridan's only mutual bank. Visit efirstfederal.bank.
In a world where honor is earned in the arena, the Knights of Valor return once more. On July 25th, the Sheridan County Fairgrounds will transform into a battleground of courage, the classless steel, thundering hooves, and a full-day Renaissance fun for the whole family. Prepare for heart-pounding jousts, heroic feats, and a day steeped in legendary adventure. Tickets go on sale May 1st. Save the date and witness the return of the Tournament of Knights.
Good morning. Welcome back to Public Pulse, proudly brought to you by our friends out there, First Federal Bank and Trust. I'm Floyd Whiting. For our second part this morning, we're joined by the Johnson County Commission Chair, Mr. Bill Novotny. Good morning, sir. Welcome back.
Hey, Floyd. Good morning. It's great to be on the phone with you.
It's a beautiful day out there in Johnson County. You guys getting a little bit of rain over there?
It hasn't started yet, but certainly we're hoping that it's going to come and rain all weekend. Sorry for the kids who are looking forward to Easter eggs, but what's better to go out and then in your snowsuit?
There you go. We have really, really needed this moisture. Hopefully this will be a spring trend. Will it be enough? What are you producers saying right now?
You know, what at this point is we're looking at the snowpack above 9,000 feet. There is some, and certainly some of the other drainages in Wyoming are doing all right. Certainly that western part of the state. But when you look at the Powder River drainage, whether that impacts Clear Creek, Rock Creek, French Creek, or guys down in KC, way, way, way below normal, which is going to drastically reduce irrigation water this year. Certainly, we know that it's very dry and basically a tinderbox. We already saw that with the fire out at Crazy Woman Canyon. This is one of the reasons that our county fire warden, Tom Camino, after consulting with our fire chiefs from Firewood, Colby Richens, and then down in the KC market down there, which is Powder River Fire District number one, Steve Haynes down there, they made that tough decision to go ahead and put those fire restrictions in place, and that's a below 7,000 feet. So, again, we're just asking people, please be vigilant. You know, little things like doing welding or other things, if you're not taking some precautions, that spark gets away suddenly. You know, even little things as people have a branding stove going, there has a possibility that we have risk for fire, and we can lower our chances of there's going to be human-caused fire. That saves the grass for wildlife, for ag producers, and a lot of heartache for folks that get impacted by those fires.
Absolutely. And things as simple, excuse me, as a hot muffler in tall grass can really set it off. And I know we're coming up on, as you said, branding season. We're going to have a lot of folks out there heading out to those fields. Just remember, try and park in areas that don't have that grass that could hit those mufflers when you take your motorcycles out. Also, that could spark fire in these dry conditions. We're looking forward to some moisture that may be coming up just around the bend. But these restrictions that are on, let's go ahead and make sure that we're following. We don't want to be the one responsible for anything. Sir, have you sat down and coordinated with any state and federal agencies this year? Have they brought information to the commission as of yet regarding fire enforcement?
Yes, Floyd. So one of the nice things, we have what's called the Bighorn Mountain Coalition. That's the four counties. That's been in existence since the Forest Service did the Forest Management Plan on the Bighorn in 2005. It's one of the longest-running intergovernmental groups in the country pertaining to forest health. We just got done with a monthly update. You know, we're very pleased. It looks like the Forest Service is going to be staffed with their seasonals when it comes to firefighting, which is always big news for us because you want to make sure that they have the resources that they need if we get into a situation. Certainly, we work cooperatively also then with the forest fire folks as well as the BLM folks. You know, we're going through a national transition where they're going to hopefully merge those fire services into one unified unit that hopefully will be able to respond more quickly, have more resources. Obviously, that's still in the early planning stages. We just heard yesterday that they were going to potentially move the head of the Forest Service out of Washington, D.C. and actually out to Salt Lake, change the forest model into a state model, which is similar to the BLM. But at the end of the day, what we've got to make sure is that we have, whether it's the tankers, the air support, or those seasonal fire guys and gals ready to go so that when we see that smoke or that call comes in, we've got the resources to hit that fast and get it put out, which is certainly kind of what we saw out at Crazy Woman. When you're dealing with a fire like House Straw, that's a little bit harder just with the winds driving that. It was going so fast, and you know, we were just very lucky that we didn't lose life or a home in that fire.
Absolutely. the QRF ideal, the quick reactionary force ideal, I think is a fantastic model. Get in there, hit that fire with everything we've got first off, and if anything, slow it down until the remaining forces can get there to help out. And speaking of the house draw fire, sir, how is the invasive grasses program rolling out there, the house draw burn scar?
Boy, it is. On the coordination effort that the Clear Creek Conservation District has done with landowners, and Johns County did get its good neighbor authority with the BLM to go ahead and treat their acres. We got that about a month ago. That's great. But what we desperately need right now is some moisture. And they made a real concerted effort to get some seeding done in that burn scar last fall. We didn't get any snow cover on that really out there, or very little. So if we're going to get any of those grasses to germinate, as we're also then treating for the cheatgrass and those other invasives are coming, we desperately need moisture over the next 30 to 40 days to get that to germinate, and we need it. And this is a lot to ask in Wyoming, but if we could turn off the wind a little bit.
yeah, absolutely.
And give those... grasses and the sagebrush and other forbs that they've put out there, that opportunity to get rooted and growing, we'll see real positive development out there. Obviously, they're going to continue with those efforts. They treated a bunch of acres last year, and I know Zach's ready to get those contractors going, and folks will see those planes in the air again pretty soon to get the last of those acres sprayed. And we're really very appreciative of the Wyoming Wildlife and Natural Resource Trust Fund that has made that available, as well as there's great partnership with a lot of other entities, Pheasants Forever and the deer organizations, a lot of people who really want to see this area come back better than before the fire.
And it's good to see that all these varied stakeholders are putting resources toward that. That's good to see, a little bit more than just talking going on out there, trying to actually preserve that, keep those invasive weeds and grasses out of there. A massive challenge for everybody. University of Wyoming's done studies on this. Sheridan County, our district is working hard over at the Elk Fire to try and prevent this. I've been shown pictures of situations in other states where these prevention efforts were not made, and they lost it. They just yellow grasses all along the hills, and it's quite heartbreaking. I'm going to shift gears on you here real quick, sir. We're going to go over to the Johnson County 1% sales tax, a big issue going on right now. Where does Johnson County currently stand in the life cycle of the optional 1% sales tax, and when does that expire?
In the late 90s, the commissioners made that a permanent tax, and you can do that by resolution. And so, we're not like some of these counties. It's about 50-50. You actually have one county, Park County, that does not use the optional 1% tax. But it is a permanent as permanent can be. It can be put back onto the ballot through a signature-gathering process. But at this point, that fifth penny is permanent. The 1% committee went through a bunch of applications for those funds for projects and community organizations. They've forwarded that on to the city and the county. We're going to be looking at those recommendations at our second meeting this month and approve those, as well as recommendations and requests from all of the department heads in the county. A lot of public safety stuff in there. Different needs and wants that folks are feel are critical for their departments. So we'll take a hard look at those. Then you have that, what's the sixth penny, or that additional optional that some places use. And we know that the city of Buffalo is looking at using that for a couple of road projects. I believe Burritt and Smith, maybe Adams. I know they're working their numbers. The county is also contemplating that as we get final engineering estimates for Rock Creek Road. That is a road that was one of the early county roads that went out clear the way out to Saddle String, where HF Bar is located, and it was not designed for the number of homes that are out in that area. It's got some unsafe curves. It needs to be widened. And then I also know that the town of Casey is, again, looking. They put a project on the ballot 2 years for one of their streets. So folks are finalizing those plans and trying to make the decision about whether or not in November they would ask for those projects. And what's key about that, Floyd, is understand if it's three projects, it's not three pennies. It's one penny that gets split three ways.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a lot to think about right there. When it comes to your decision-making process, sir, when you've got all your information, you go in there to listen to these individuals present their needs and wants. Do you have a list that you go down in your head as to where your vote or where your decision's going to lay?
You know, I do, Floyd. I look at how many folks are going to get impacted by that allocation. Is it something that is an immediate need? Is it something that can be delayed? You also take a look at the track record of that group. Have they had a good record of being fiscal stewards and they've taken good care of their facility or project, or do they govern by the emergency mentality and that they don't address problems until they are emergency? Because those really are things that bother me when we're you know, and it's hard because we do it in county government. We defer and delay maintenance because of price tags. I know just the other day we're looking at a chip seal project on five county roads. The last time we chip sealed those county roads, Floyd, it was $300,000. The engineer's estimate on the cost is now $1.2
million.
Wow. So you are making those hard decisions, and sometimes you just can't defer those things anymore. So those are things that really guide me when I'm looking at those requests that come in. We're trying to be the best stewards. We're also keeping an emphasis on health, welfare, and safety. But I also then think we have to factor in that we want a vibrant community. We want a community where young people want to stay, young people want to move into, a community that we have a lot of seniors in Johnson County, making sure that we're addressing their needs, whether it's through services provided through Johnson County Public Health or the Buffalo Senior Center and the work they also do down in KC. So those are really what my drivers are on those things, Floyd.
Sir, over the past couple of years, watching this inflation, these prices just skyrocket. You know, what you just described here, four times as much required to get the same job done in not that many years. How, and I know I'm going off a little bit here, but I just, it makes me wonder how, as a public a servant, you make these decisions, you and the rest of the commission sitting down, looking at this expanse of things that need to be done, and it seems like the revenue to get these, or the cash flow to get these things done, just isn't growing as fast. How are these decisions weighed on your mind as you sit at that table with, you know, your partners, to the other commissioners, to get this done?
Well, Floyd, it's one of those things that we have witnessed over the years. Stuff that normally would have been paid for with general fund dollars has moved in to use those optional 1% dollars. We're seeing that for cattle guards and crushing and other things that are really essential. But if we didn't use those additional dollars, certainly we go after every possible grant that we can. I applaud our sheriff. He's been working with Congresswoman Harriet Hegeman on the purchase of some vehicles for the sheriff's department. You go after all the outside dollars that you can, but exactly that. At the end of the day, you have X number of dollars. We are required to produce a balanced budget. We do that, but it gets increasingly difficult. You know, we saved a bunch of money this year on snowplow budget. Unfortunately, the dollars that we saved there are probably going to get eaten up by increased gas and diesel costs this summer, as well as when we go to grade those roads, if we don't have any moisture in them, now we got to bring in water trucks. So you add actually additional costs. So you feel like you take one step forward and then Sometimes it's two or three steps sideways, and sometimes it even is a step backwards.
It's got to be extremely frustrating. Sir, I've got about 30 seconds left. What major project in Johnson County this year are you looking forward to the most?
We got a Barnum Road bridge project that's going to be great. We've got some resurfacing projects that we're partnering with on YDOT. But the one I'm really looking forward to, Floyd, is the start of construction of that Sheridan College in Johnson County campus across from the high school. I think that's going to be a great project, and hopefully we've got some shovels and work going on at the Veterans Home very soon on renovations at the domicilary. So there's going to be a lot of things going on in Johnson County this summer.
It really is. There's going to be construction all over the place. It's expanding in all the best ways. Sir, thank you so much for calling in this morning. It is always a pleasure to sit and talk with you.
You too, Floyd. Have a great Easter to you and yours. We'll talk to you later.
You've been listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE and 103.9 FM. Sheridan.
Sheridan, I'm Nicole Pierce.
And I'm Maren Borsheim with First Federal Bank and Trust.
Dreaming about owning your first home?
The Mortgage Rate Relief Program could lower your interest rate by 1.5% below the current market rate with a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage.
That means real monthly savings.
It's available to qualifying homebuyers purchasing a primary residence.
Let's see if you qualify.
Funds are limited, so stop in, call us, or visit efirstfederal.bank.
First Federal Bank and Trust. Homeownership just got more affordable. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
REACH, Resources, Education, Autism, Community Harmony, presents the third annual REACH Benefit Concert, Saturday, April 11th at the Sheridan County Fairgrounds. An awesome evening of food and music featuring country singer-songwriter Jessica Lynn.
I got this crazy idea. Why don't you call me baby?
And more outstanding performers, including Stereo Pilot with Stephanie Wilkerson and Paul Radsey, Rich Braddon, Carson Norling, Art Eichley, and another surprise Grammy Award-winning guest appearance.
Food and drink concessions by NOLA.
The doors open at 6:15. General admission tickets are $42. Available online at yotheater.com. Limited tables also available by calling Raleigh at 752-7712.
Proceeds from the evening benefit REACH.
The third annual REACH Benefit Concert with Jessica Lynn. 6:15, Saturday, April 11th at the Sheridan County Fairgrounds. Sponsored in part by your friends at Sheridan Media.
The Valencia Barrington Project is a rare ensemble dedicated to reviving the beautiful and unusual sound of the Barrington, an 18th century instrument that combines the warmth of a viola with sympathetic strings that resonate beneath the melody, creating a sound unlike anything most audiences have heard before. Enjoy this extraordinary evening of chamber music, Tuesday, April 14th at 7 p.m. in the intimate listening environment of the Wild Theater's Tandem Hall. Seating is extremely limited in this unique space, so reserve your tickets today at the Wild box office or online at wildtheater.com. The Valencia Barrington Project, Tuesday, April 14th.
The following message is presented by Century 21 BHJ, 101 South Main.
The IRS and the AARP Tax Aid Foundation have partnered with the Hub on Smith to offer free tax preparation and assistance. To make an appointment, please call 672-2240. You will then get a return call to finalize the appointment, so be sure to answer. You will be asked to pick up a packet prior to your appointment, and we have a team of IRS certified volunteers.